Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Nick Miles, and at 14 hours GMT on Thursday the 19th of March, these are our main stories. The nationwide shutdown in Italy is to be extended beyond the end of next week when it was due to expire. China has had its first day since the pandemic began without any domestic transmission of COVID-19. And pressure is growing for the Olympic Games to be postponed. Also in this podcast, there are calls in America's major cities to build shelters for thousands of homeless people to help stem the spread of the coronavirus outbreak.
I've been crying out to the president since 2015 to treat this like the FEMA-like crisis it is. Dr. Drew Pinsky and I specifically did a video not too long ago on Fox News directed toward the president, and he watched it and he started talking about a FEMA-like approach.
We begin this podcast in Italy, which is about to reach a depressing milestone in its fight against COVID-19. In the coming hours, it's likely to overtake China in the number of lives coronavirus has claimed. Given that, it's no surprise the government has extended its lockdown. It said the widespread restrictions of movement and shop closures would go on until the middle of April. Hospitals there are under immense pressure. Stefano Fagioli is a doctor working in Bergamo in northern Italy.
We are in full emergency with this coronavirus pandemia. Our health personnel, nurses and physicians are working round the clock countless hours to fight this incredible situation. We do not know how long this pandemia will last. For the general population, please stay at home.
Our correspondent Seema Kotecha is in Rome and she says today is a crucial one.
Just under 3,000 people have died, but when the figures come out tonight at 6 p.m. local time, as they do every day, eyes will be on them, because if a few hundred more die today, like they've been doing over the last few days, the Italian death toll will be higher than the total death toll from this virus in China. So a big moment for Italy, an incredibly sad moment for this country that is at the moment dealing with this outbreak. The north particularly bad, hospitals struggling to cope. They're running out of key equipment. And the Prime Minister has said that the stringent measures that have been in place over the last 10 days or so could be made more strict to stop this outbreak from spreading. So people at the moment can walk around if they've got a dog or want to go to the shops to get some groceries. But there is a chance that even just popping out for those few minutes could be banned too. So Italy on full alert.
Well, meanwhile, the 15-day lockdown imposed in France a couple of days ago is also likely to be extended. Officials said that they would continue to ask citizens to abide by the emergency restrictions as the epidemic continues to spread. In Europe as a whole, more than 250 million people are living under lockdown. In most cases, it means they're confined to their homes and only allowed out for work or to buy essential food. Images of normally busy, famous tourist sites such as the Colosseum in Rome and the Champ de Mars in Paris, site of the Eiffel Tower, show deserted streets. Our Europe correspondent Gavin Lee is in Brussels.
In the space of less than a week, you know, you've got some of the most beautiful sites in the capitals all across Europe, where some of these places like Venice and Paris and Rome, hard to think that there were protests, you know, a year ago, anti-tourism protests, too many people in these places, now nothing, empty, so many towns and cities that look like ghost towns. And it's the same here in Belgium at the moment. So, you know, just the fourth in a row of, you know, major countries taking radical steps when it comes to quarantine measures. After Italy, France, Denmark, Spain and Belgium, the Belgians haven't taken the most strict in terms of lockdown. They say it's strict confinement for now. But what that means is if you leave the house, it has to be for work, it has to be for supermarket, for food, it has to be for a pharmacy or the doctors. But there is a bit more leeway in the sense that you can go to get your hair cut, for example, or you can go to a library, but you will be monitored by police on patrol in vehicles as well. They haven't started issuing fines here yet. They said that the first couple of days will be friendly, but in France at the moment, they've already issued 4,000 fines to people for breaching the confinement measures. So this is, you know, a time at the moment, this odd lockdown that people are having to become used to, that's going to become normal over the next few weeks.
That's Gavin Lee. Well, the coronavirus pandemic is at dramatically different stages across the world. In India and across Africa and Latin America, it seems to be at a very early stage, but numbers are growing. In China, the picture is very different. For the first time since the outbreak started in December, there have been no new homegrown cases. No time for complacency, though. Beijing says there have been 34 new cases among people who recently returned to China. Michael Bristow is our Asia-Pacific editor. So is the fear now of a surge in cases of infected people coming into China and other East Asian countries?
I think it is. China actually addressed this point a couple of days ago and actually downplayed the chances of this reinfection by people returning to China. But indeed, across the region, it appears that is the biggest worry at the moment. A lot of countries and places, Hong Kong, China, South Korea, Taiwan, Singapore, have recorded an uptick in cases. And these are places that previously have been praised perhaps for not having very many cases and doing a lot to suppress the number of cases. They've seen an uptick in cases, as you say, mainly from places from abroad. So that's the biggest effect. But the news there as well, I think it's worth emphasising that in China, remember, this is a country we've been looking at for the past few months as a source of the disease, where most infections were reported, no new homegrown or kind of domestically transmitted cases, an extraordinary figure, really. And in Wuhan, the centre of the disease city, people have been allowed out slowly in groups. So domestic infections stopped, but imported cases rising.
So what measures are in place in China and elsewhere to prevent that?
Lots of measures have been imposed across the region. In China particularly, they've opened in Beijing a former SARS hospital. This was a previous a similar infection to COVID-19 about 20 years ago. A new 100,000-bed hospital in Beijing. People arriving at Beijing International Airport, if they showed symptoms, they will be taken straight to this hospital. Across the region, other measures as well. In Hong Kong, you've got people having to wear electronic bracelets and being tagged, their movements being tagged. So tougher measures across the region.
Michael Bristow, in California in the United States, people are being told to stay at home to protect themselves and others from the virus. But more than 100,000 Californians are homeless. What happens to them? The BBC's Reagan Morris reports from Los Angeles.
Do have everyone wash their hands as they enter the building.
On LA Skid Row, there's a new hand-washing station inside the Union Rescue Mission. The mission shelters nearly 1,000 people every night. They're trying to space out the bunks for social distancing, and they've set up a quarantine in their gymnasium. But just outside the front door, thousands of others sleep in squalor on the streets. Reverend Andy Bales runs the mission. He thinks fears of the coronavirus might finally force society to solve the homeless crisis in California.
Maybe the pandemic will wake us up to not leave people on the streets vulnerable to this. We've actually set ourselves up for a disaster by not immediately dealing with this. And perhaps this will wake us up to get places for everybody to go.
So a pandemic could actually solve the homeless situation.
Yeah, and how sad that it takes that.
And you have several quarantines set up. Is anyone in them?
We had a couple families in the quarantine area, but again, it turns out it's more the common flu, as far as we know, although the families went into the hospital and did not receive tests, as you may have heard, that they're really not testing people unless they're very, very ill.
But on Skid Row, many people say coronavirus is the least of their worries. It's been cold and raining in L.A. Staying dry and warm is difficult on the streets. Tyrone Williams lives at the mission. He called coronavirus a fancy disease, one that affects rich people who travel, not the people of Skid Row. There's a lot of people living out on the streets that don't have access to running water and facilities and hand sanitizer. I think that's why people worry that it could spread more quickly down here.
I think everywhere it is, because look at it, it's spreading anyway. People's on planes, buildings, you know. This reminds me of 9/11, how they're shutting everything down.
You're not worried about getting sick?
No. I've been through a lot more in my life than to worry about something like that. Yeah.
But many people are worried. Homeless encampments exist in nearly every neighborhood in L.A. People sleeping under bridges, in public parks, and along L.A.'s many highways. The camps are typically grim, with no running water or access to toilets. California Governor Gavin Newsom says the state's coronavirus response prioritizes homeless people.
We have 108,000 unsheltered homeless individuals in the state of California. We need to meet this moment aggressively to get people out of encampments and sidewalks. We are in real time procuring hotels and motels to convert to appropriate sites. To give you a sense of what we're doing, we have additional 450 trailers that we have identified that will be dispersing to critical points across this state, and we're working to address the needs within the shelters so that, again, we have appropriate distancing.
New York, California, and Washington have some of America's largest homeless populations. They also have the three worst coronavirus outbreaks. Suddenly having a population that leaves needles and garbage everywhere and defecates on the sidewalk doesn't simply seem disgusting, though it is. It seems dangerous and insane.
That's how Fox News frames the homeless crisis in California. And it's the news channel President Trump prefers. Reverend Bales knows that. He traveled to Washington last week to ask the Trump administration to build emergency shelters for the tens of thousands of homeless people living on the streets of L.A. and other major U.S. cities.
I've been crying out to the president for since 2015 to treat this like the FEMA-like crisis it is. Dr. Drew Pinsky and I specifically did a video not too long ago on Fox News directed toward the president, and he watched it, and he started talking about a FEMA-like approach. And I was just in Washington, D.C., and spoke to Ben Carson and others at HUD and asked them to treat the L.A. conditions in L.A. like a FEMA-like crisis, and perhaps that is going to happen.
That was the Reverend Andy Bales ending that report from Reagan Morris in Los Angeles. Now, for a more positive story on coronavirus, they're hard to find, but as COVID-19 has an impact on work and travel, levels of air pollutants and warming gases over some cities and regions are showing significant drops. Our environment correspondent Matt McGrath reports.
Data collected in New York and analysed by researchers at Columbia University suggests that emissions of carbon monoxide, mainly due to cars, fell by around 50% for a couple of days this week. There was also a 5 to 10% drop in carbon dioxide over New York and a solid reduction in methane as well. These numbers echo findings from virus hotspots in China and northern Italy. Scientists believe that the virus-driven slowdown could see an overall fall in global carbon emissions this year.
That was Matt McGrath. Coming up in this podcast, we'll hear from a choir master who wants to keep Britain singing from their own homes via the internet.
We'll have to work initially like a broadcast, so I will broadcast over the internet to say, right, this is what we're going to do, and then people will send their recordings to me. And so I'll send out instructions, backing tracks, all the tools that people will need, and then we'll put them together. And there is a great demand for this. We've already had 15,000 people sign up because I think people are desperate, and, you know, I'm desperate, and we all need things to do.
Well, now, here's my colleague Jackie with a special message.
Hello. Remember back at the start of the month, we did a special edition of the Global News podcast when we put your questions about the coronavirus to a panel of our experts? Well, obviously, the story has developed since then, so we're going to do another one. This is where you come in again. Record yourself saying who and where you are and your question about the coronavirus and attach it to an email to the usual address, globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. Thank you.
That was Jackie Leonard. So far, the levers the world uses to steady the global economy have had little impact. Interest rate cuts, hundreds of billions of dollars of loans, guarantees, injections of cash into economies have all been tried, but the stock markets have continued to fall. The latest move came late on Wednesday when the European Central Bank launched an $820 billion scheme to buy up government and company debt across the Eurozone. I got more details from our economics correspondent, Andrew Walker.
European markets got off to actually a relatively steady start. A number of them were significantly higher, and continental European markets generally still are. London has moved into negative territory, though not particularly to a large extent, certainly not by the standards of the last couple of weeks. What the European Central Bank has done is announced that it's going to go into the financial markets. It's an extension of this programme known as quantitative easing, and it's specifically linked to the pandemic situation. It will buy $800 billion worth of financial assets, including a lot of government debt. Now, that, I think, seems to have given some degree of reassurance to markets. It was a bit of a jolt as well, because it was announced at the most unusual time, something like midnight in Europe. And I must say, I don't recall the ECB ever doing anything in those sort of circumstances.
So why might this have worked, whereas the other measures don't seem to have been effective?
Well, perhaps there may be a little bit of targeting going on here. It's quite difficult to see exactly how the ECB is going to do this. I mean, one of the key things that we can take away from what governments are going to do is that they're going to end up with a lot more debt. They're not going to be able to finance their additional spending through raising taxes, so they're going to borrow more. And what the ECB is doing, I mean, it doesn't particularly like it being expressed in this way, I don't think, but it's indirectly creating new money to enable governments to finance some of that spending. And there was a hint, but only a hint, in its statement that it might be targeting a little bit on some of the countries who've seen their borrowing costs rise in the last few days, notably Italy and Greece.
Andrew Walker. Many towns in Australia are only just recovering from months of deadly bushfires that have destroyed property, livestock and financial livelihoods. Now a decision to close the country's borders to stop the coronavirus spreading will only make life harder, denying crucial funds to towns almost entirely dependent on tourism. Our reporter Henry Bellow has more.
The decision to close Australia's borders couldn't come at a worse time for towns only just beginning to recover from the worst bushfires on record. 46 million acres burnt, 34 people killed, and at least 1 billion animals lost. Images of people and livestock hiding from flames on beaches before being rescued by the Navy were broadcast around the world. And understandably, many people reconsidered travelling to a country on fire with at times the worst air quality in the world. But in the last month, green shoots have started emerging from charred trees. People are rebuilding their homes and the government is spending millions of dollars to lure tourists back to the country with a simple message.
If you're thinking of coming to Australia, there is actually no better time to come here. We need your support.
Our doors are open and we'd love to see you.
Open for business.
Advertisements like that have just been suspended because Australia is no longer open for tourism, and the financial impact is huge. Many communities are almost entirely dependent on tourism, and travellers from China alone pump $9 billion into the economy each year. Money is the key to recovery for these communities, and some are beginning to question how long they can survive, with tourists forced to stay away or unwilling to travel given the anxiety caused by the pandemic.
Henry Bellow. To India now, where one of its most famous food services, which rushes home-cooked meals to office workers, says it's suspending operations because of concerns about the coronavirus. Our South Asia editor Jill McGivering reports.
This is a blow for the army of office workers in the Indian city of Mumbai. Dabawalas there are renowned for their fast, reliable service and complex operation. Every day they collect about 200,000 cooked meals or tiffin from customers' homes, typically in tiered metal containers, and dash across the city with them by train or bicycle so office workers can have them for lunch. They've been going for more than 125 years and served as a model for more modern, app-based food delivery companies.
A growing number of high-profile athletes are calling for this summer's Olympics to be cancelled or postponed because of the pandemic. The Olympic flame was today handed over to organisers of the Tokyo Games in a scaled-down ceremony in Greece. The event has previously only ever been cancelled because of the First and Second World Wars. Charlotte Gallagher reports.
It's the biggest sports event in the world, with a global audience of billions of people. But the future of this year's Olympic Games in Tokyo looks far from certain because of coronavirus. The current pole vaulting champion, Greece's Katerina Stefanidi, has accused organisers of putting the health of elite athletes at risk by expecting them to continue training as others are told to stay at home. Britain's Katerina Johnson-Thompson, the world heptathlon champion, told the BBC that she feels pressure to keep the same routine, even though it's impossible. The four-time Olympic ice hockey gold medalist, Canada's Hayley Wickenheiser, says organisers are being insensitive and irresponsible. Many athletes have yet to qualify for the Games, and events they'd be competing at to gain those places are being cancelled. The head of the Spanish Olympic Committee, Alejandro Blanco, says he would prefer the event to be suspended. The British four-time Olympic rowing gold medalist Matthew Pinsent agrees.
I just think there are bigger things to worry about at this stage. On a global front, we have other priorities. And I think the Olympics should at the very least be saying we should postpone, or indeed we should just cancel at this stage and we'll talk about postponement later on.
The International Olympic Committee says it's held constructive talks with the representatives of athletes, but says there are still 4 months to go until the Games. But with mounting concern from athletes, and even the Japanese Deputy Prime Minister describing the event as cursed, some feel it's inevitable that it will be cancelled.
Charlotte Gallagher, and some more news on the impact coronavirus has had on sport. All English Premier League games and women's matches have now been suspended until at least the end of April. Now, it may feel hard to keep your spirits up with all this sombre news, but there are some positive stories out there. More and more communities are clubbing together to support each other and coming up with imaginative ideas to help people get through their increasing isolation. Many of us will have seen the videos of people in Spain and Italy standing at their balconies playing instruments and singing to each other. Well, the British choirmaster Gareth Bellode has for years made it his mission to get British people from all backgrounds to come together and sing in choirs. He's now got a new project, the Great British Home Chorus, which aims to keep Britain singing from their homes via the internet.
When you're down and out, when you're on the street,
there are huge numbers of people who would ordinarily be going out and seeing people every single week at their choir. And for many older, isolated people who are no longer working, it can be the one time in the week where you're making human contact. And that has just been taken away from everyone. So I think we are facing a mental health crisis of sorts. And several choirs are springing up all over the place, all over the internet, people trying to make this work. It's such an important form of communication. You know, if you can't touch and you can't be in the same room, at least you can hear each other's voices. You know, it sort of makes me think of yodelers, you know, yodeling from one mountaintop to another, you know, as they're on their own with the sheep. You know, you need to be heard. You need to sort of say, here I am. And that's not really happening at the moment. And it's just a sort of basic human need, I think. We'll respond to what people want and we will try and make this work. There is a technical problem that there is a delay when things are done over the internet, and a lot of choirs have been trying to do things over Zoom or Skype or FaceTime, and at the moment the technology isn't quite quick enough that everyone can sing together remotely. We'll have to work initially like a broadcast, so I will broadcast over the internet to say, right, this is what we're going to do, and then people will send their recordings to me, and so I'll send out instructions, backing tracks, all the tools that people will need, and then we'll put them together. And there is a great demand for this. We've already had 15,000 people sign up because I think people are desperate, and you know, I'm desperate. I mean, we all need things to do.
Gareth Malone's choir singing Simon and Garfunkel's Bridge Over Troubled Water. And that's all from us for now, but there will be an updated version of the Global News podcast later. Before we go, in Wednesday's podcast, we featured an interview Alan Kisuja did with the Kenyan musical performer Marcy Onsinyo. Some of you loved her music so much, you wanted us to repeat her name. So once more, it's Marcy Onsinyo. If you want to comment on this podcast or the topics covered in it, you can send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. I'm Nick Miles, and until next time, goodbye.